The Big Scary Show is brought to you in part by Dark Imaginings, web design, creepy changing portraits, and much, much more. DarkImaginings.com.
For the deepest, darkest crypts, to the backwoods swamp where you hit the bottom, from the inside of your casket to the fears lodged deep inside your subconscious, it's time for the Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Edward Douglas from Midnight Syndicate, and you are listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Gavin Gosko from Midnight Syndicate, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
What's up, guys? This is Ryan with Lake Hickory Haunts. You are listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Ted Ramey, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hello, creeps. It's me, John Kassir, the voice of the Crypt Keeper. And you're listening to The Big Scary Show, the top podcast in the industry.
Hi, my name is Jason Blazak. I'm from Screamline Studios, and you know what you're listening to, right? Right? The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Kane Hodder from Friday the 13th, Hatchet, Smothered, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hey, everybody, this is Nick Wolf giving a big shout-out to all the fans of The Big Scary Show.
You're listening to The Big Scary Show with three big scary men and one that wears more makeup than I do.
All right, all you Big Scary Show fans, you've tuned in to another frightfully fun episode of The Big Scary Show. And this week, for episode number 169, we're celebrating the fact that after 11 long months, it's finally October. And that means haunt season. That's right, most haunts have opened or are opening this weekend. For this episode, we're bringing you a show packed with information, interviews, and fun. In addition, we want you to remember that this season is short, so get out there and support your local haunts. We sent Jerry Vane up to Cedar Point in Sandusky, Ohio. Yes, the Haunstrumentalist went up to Cedar Point to check out the one and only Midnight Syndicate. Ed and Gavin of Midnight Syndicate are performing for the next few weeks at Cedar Point's Hollow Weekends, and he got to talk to them behind the scenes about their new show, Conspiracy of Shadows. In addition, he talks to stage manager Ryan Harris and Ashley Watkins, the vocalist, performing during the show. If you can't make it to Ohio this month, you don't want to miss these interviews. Also, Badger is on the road in North Carolina at none other than Lake Hickory Haunts. He talks to Ryan Settlemyer about all the new events happening at the haunt and why you need to get out there to check it out. In addition, Badger talks to Jen Braverman of Transworld about the Legendary Haunt Tour. It may be mid-October, but what better way to close out the 2018 season with a trip to Salt Lake City and the Legendary Haunt Tour? It's not too late to make your plans, so be sure to tune in. Meat Hook Jim is back with Between the Corpses, talking about a subject important to every haunter. Do I buy or do I build my props? Listen to his take on it and decide what works best for you. Storm is ranting about social media and how it may be affecting us. Be sure to give it a listen in a haunt minute. In addition, we give Storm the reins during the Round Table of Terror as he takes over as host of America's favorite spooky game show, The 13 Questions of Doom. Who wins? Who loses? You don't want to miss a second of this fan favorite roundtable. Special correspondent Veister is back with another haunted vista and a retrospect of 50 years of Night of the Living Dead. Can you believe it's been 50 years? Make sure to tune in for that. Jerry Vane spins a trio of haunted tunes. Badger reads the latest in Deadline news, and there may even be a gruesome giveaway for the month of October. You know, any giveaway in October is going to be extra special, so be sure to listen and be sure to enter. All this, plus much, much more on the show, so sit back, relax, grab a cold beverage, and enjoy episode 169 of The Big Scary Show. This year, the legendary Haunt Tour heads west to Salt Lake City, Utah, to tour the SLC Fear Factory on November 9th and Nightmare on 13th on November 10th. Tickets for the legendary Haunt Tour 2018 to Salt Lake City are now on sale with early bird pricing. Tickets include nightly haunt tours, transportation to each attraction to and from the host hotel, dinner each night, lights on tours of each attraction, and a roundtable Q&A with the haunt owners. It's a fun and spooky way to wind down the Halloween season with your fellow haunters. Get more information and tickets at legendaryhaunttour.com. Also follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The Legendary Haunt Tour. It's not just good, it's legendary. And ladies and gentlemen, I know it is right at the beginning of haunt season, but unfortunately this is a short season, and the end of the haunt season is coming in November, so what better way to close out the 2018 haunt season than to travel all the way out to Salt Lake City, Utah for the Legendary Haunt Tour 2018. It's going to be a good one. They're going to be hitting a couple of really good quality haunts, Nightmare on 13th and Fear Factory. And to talk a little bit more about it, I have the organizer, Jen Braverman, no stranger to the show, who is graciously taking a couple of minutes to talk to us here. Hi, Jen.
Hey, how are you guys?
Great to have you here. Legendary Haunt Tour is happening November 9th and 10th. And it's in Salt Lake City. I mean, I remember the first year you did Legendary was in Kansas City, I believe.
Yeah.
And I know you've had a couple in Texas, but it's primarily been in the Midwest and the East Coast. Why go all the way out to Utah, despite the fact you got some good haunts out there?
Because we haven't been out there yet, and because of the fact that we have some good haunts out there. So we're really excited for this year. We have a great opportunity to tour two amazing haunts, so we're really excited about that.
How have the ticket sales been as far as, I assume you can go ahead and get the sales and pre-sales are going on as we speak?
Yeah, October 9th, the hotel expires. So for anyone that's listening, definitely try to get your hotel in for Legendary. They will still offer rooms after that date, but I don't know that you'll get the discount rate that we have. So I would definitely jump on the website now if you're planning on going to Legendary and get your tickets, at least for the hotel.
And the host hotel is the Holiday Inn Express.
Inn Express,
right.
Yes.
And are they running, I assume they're running a very good rate for Legendary Haunt Tour.
Yeah, everything's a good rate, and then it's a great hotel. It's a great property. It's not too far from the haunts. It's kind of near things, so I think it's a good place to make a headquarters hotel. So we're very excited to be going out there. We're excited that these two amazing haunts are hosting us, and what better, to go to Salt Lake City. It's an amazing town as well.
I will admit I have never been to Salt Lake City, so, it should be very interesting. Tell us a little bit about what you're getting for the tours. Tell us a little bit what you know about Nightmare on 13th and the Fear Factory.
So they're both two amazing haunted houses. Nightmare on 13th, what you're getting is you're going to get a behind the scenes, which is exciting because when you typically tour the haunts, you don't usually get to go behind the scenes. So you'll get a chance to talk to the owners. Typically, that's our format, what we do, where we serve dinners and you get a chance to go through the haunted houses before and then, again, lights on, and then a chance as well to talk to the owners and ask them questions about their facilities. So, I think the tour is very educational, and it gives people a time to network after a long season.
And what about Fear Factory?
Fear Factory is the same thing. So typically that's what we do. We usually do two or three haunts. So Fear Factory, you're going to have dinner there as well, and you're going to get a chance to, tour the haunted houses, do a behind the scenes, as well as asking Q&A after. So You know, all of those things are very, very beneficial for people who are either just getting started in the business or veterans who just want to, you know, figure out what else they can add to their already existing event.
Now, as far as social events, are there any parties going on? Are there any, you know, networking events?
We have after parties and stuff like that that obviously is going on for people that not work. Gatherings where people can go and hang out at the bars and that kind of stuff and talk about how their season was. You know, that's a really big thing for Legendary, where everyone gets to compare notes when things are still fresh in their heads.
Excellent. Sounds like it's going to be another great tour again. Now, the price, I understand, is going up in early November, so now is the time to go ahead and hop on that, correct?
Yeah. I mean, if people know they're going, they shouldn't wait to buy their tickets. So that'd be great. You know, we'd love everyone to purchase tickets early. It helps us with the planning of the event a lot better than when people wait till the end. And unfortunately, that happens more time than we like.
I can only imagine. So let's go ahead and get all the info for people wanting information on Legendary Haunt Tour 2018. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, so I was going to say visit the website for all the information, because it's on there, and if people have questions, they can feel free to either call me or email us, and, you know, we can help them better plan. The itinerary should be up in the next week or two of, you know, the exact times that everything's happening, you know, when the buses are picking up, when dinners are happening, when the buses will be returning and all that, so people can look out for that in the next few weeks.
Excellent. So those dates again, November 9th and 10th, that's kind of really the last weekend of haunt season. Some haunts will be open the first week in November, of course. And a lot of haunts actually are ending the last weekend in October, because Halloween's on a Wednesday this year. So this is an excellent opportunity. If you work at a haunt or you own a haunt, you don't get a chance to go out and check out what's in your town or your state, this is an excellent opportunity to see two of the best out west and network with all your fellow haunters, check out some really cool stuff, talk to the owners, get a nice Q&A in there. Of course, the parties, the hotel, I understand, is nice. Is everything included in one price? Or what are you getting for one price?
Yeah, everything on the ticket price, it's on the website, everything's included. That includes transportation, that includes the haunts, that includes the dinner, that includes everything.
So it does not include hotel, and it does not include transportation, obviously.
No, it includes the transportation to and from the haunt.
Right, but not to Salt Lake or to the hotels.
Right, exactly.
Okay. So there you go, folks. Legendary Haunt Tour 2018, going all the way out west to Salt Lake City. So if you're somebody who lives in California or Oregon or Washington, and you've thought, well, I can't go to Legendary because it's all the way over on the East Coast, here's an opportunity to see something almost in your own backyard. If you're somebody that wants to check out these great ones, check out legendaryhaunttour.com. Everything you need to know about it, November 9th through the 10th in Salt Lake City, is right there. Jen, any final words? Anything else we need to know about it before we go?
No, I think that's it for now.
Always a pleasure to have Jen Braverman on with us. Once again, folks.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Once again, Legendary Haunt Tour, November 9th and 10th, legendaryhaunttour.com, and they'll see you in Salt Lake City.
The B-Movie Monsters, 1031, on the Big Scary Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is time for Deadline News here on The Big Scary Show with your host, me, Drew Badger, bringing you all the latest in the haunted house, Halloween, and horror industries. Hello everyone, this is Drew Badger for Deadline News, episode 169, and unfortunately we must start with some sad news from the Torment at 1200 Haunted Attraction in Orion, Illinois. It is with a heavy heart that we tell you our beloved friend, brother, and haunter, Bob Kirby Enlow, passed away on October 2nd in his sleep at the age of 67. Bob was a wonderful, genuine, funny, caring, talented man who will be deeply missed. Kirby never missed a single night entertaining each and every visitor over the past 14 years, including all his help and dedication to Torment behind the scenes. Our love, thoughts, and prayers go out to all of his family and friends. Fly high, Bobby. We love you, brother. The Big Scary Show sends out its deepest condolences to the friends, family, and fans of Bob Kirby Enlow and the Torment at 1200 Haunted Attraction, and offers up this moment of silence. We have this update from Crypticon coming to Bloomington, Minnesota. We are happy to hear Joe Ripple will be joining us again this year. He's the founder of Scares That Care, a retired Baltimore County, Maryland police detective, and in 2007, as a tribute to the daughter of a fellow officer who succumbed to a terminal illness, he founded Scares That Care. The charity originally started with the goal of raising $10,000 a year for organizations such as Make-A-Wish and the Kennedy Krieger Institute. After several successful campaigns, the charity became more formalized in 2011 as an IRS-approved 501c3 and a newly established board of directors. They refocused to fight the real monsters of childhood illness, burns, and breast cancer by helping families that are experiencing these extraordinary hardships cope with the financial burden by raising and providing $10,000 per sponsored family. They are a 100% volunteer organization in order to maximize supporters, donations, and those who need it. Welcome, Joe, to Crypticon. Get more information on Crypticon happening October 26th through the 28th and support Scares That Care, the Big Scary Show does, at CrypticonMinneapolis.com and also ScaresThatCare.org. We have this news regarding killer clowns from outer space via BloodyDisgusting.com. One of the highlights of Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Orlando this year is seeing 1988's Killer Clowns from Outer Space represented at the event. For a clowns fan, it's pure heaven on earth, and now that the cult classic film actually has a Halloween Horror Nights maze, they're thinking a sequel may be the next logical step. The Chiodo brothers, who created it, have been talking about making another clown film for many, many years, but the reality is that MGM controls the rights, and they haven't wanted to do much of anything with the property these last several years. But there seems to be a small glimmer of hope right now, as the Halloween Horror Nights maze has suggested. Quote, I used to say don't hold your breath, but things have been happening right now. I would say you can hold your breath now, the brothers told the crowd at Son of Monster Palooza recently. The success of It recently has kind of educated some of the people in the industry that clowns are cool, clowns are scary, they're looking at horror properties now more seriously than ever. I can say something will be happening with killer clowns from outer space in the near future, absolutely. Unquote. As usual, stay tuned for further updates if and when we get them. We have this news from the Hellusions Haunted House in Houston, Texas. After 3 years, three moves, some amazing scares, a blood run, and a baby, we've decided to take a pregnant pause. All that scaring can really wear you out. It's been an amazing 3 years, and you never know what the future may hold. Thank you for all the love and support you've shown us. Love, peace, and nightmares. Keep up with any and all updates upon their possible return at their Facebook page, facebook.com/Hellusions. Hellusions. We have this news from the Aatrox Factory in Leeds, Alabama. New for 2018, Aatrox presents Altered State 4D Experience, a new event at the haunt. You'll be subject to experiments like never before. Once you enter, you'll be strapped in and cannot exit. Do not enter if you suffer from any of these issues. If you're prone to motion sickness, loud noises, fog, strobe lights, intense sounds, claustrophobia, etc. No refunds or exchanges. You can add on only, but they cannot be purchased without buying an admission ticket, and you must be used the same night as the purchase ticket. On-site ticket booth hours are Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday from 7 to 10, Friday and Saturday from 7 to 11. Aatrox Factory is closed on Mondays and Tuesdays, except on Halloween night or week, and special events. Check their calendar at aatroxfactory.com for dates, and we'll see you in an altered state. We have this sad news from the Thunderbird Trail of Fear in Noble, Oklahoma. With heavy hearts, we must announce that the Thunderbird Trail of Fear will not be opening for the 2018 season. This decision came neither easily nor lightly, but it was the right one. We sincerely hope that however each of you decide to spend your weekend nights in October, you do so safely and in good company. Everyone, enjoy the haunt season. Keep up with any updates if they reopen or not at their Facebook page, facebook.com/Thunderbird Trail of Fear. And finally, we have this update from Days of the Dead coming to Chicago. It is with great pleasure that we announce the addition of musician, artist, activist, punk rock legend, occasional screen actor, and all-around connoisseur of the weird, Jello Biafra, to the guest roster for Days of the Dead Chicago, happening November 16th through the 18th at the Chicago Schaumburg Marriott. Best known as co-founder, frontman, main songwriter, and all-around brains of the iconic punk rock band The Dead Kennedys, and still chief of the Alternative Tentacles Records, Jello Biafra stands as one of the most transgressive names in music history, challenging the status quo socially, artistically, and politically over the past 40 years. In true punk rock spirit, Jello Biafra will be signing autographs for free at Days of the Dead Chicago. Jello will be autographing his current work and vintage-only Dead Kennedys material. None of the later reprints or bootlegs, please. Jello Biafra joins previously announced guests Clive Barker, Coolio, Tommy Flanagan, Tiny Lister, Sid Haig, Bill Moseley, and many more guests still to be announced as Days of the Dead closes out another year in the Windy City. Tickets for Days of the Dead Chicago are on sale now at daysofthedead.com. And remember, folks, you can hear about each and every one of the haunted attractions and get all the latest news, whether we've mentioned it here or on Big Scary News, by going to findahaunt.com. That's findahaunt.com. Remember, folks, if you have news in the haunted house, Halloween, or horror industries, and you want it on the show, email it to us, news@bigscaryshow.com, and we'll get it on the show. No news is too big or too small. This concludes this edition of the Big Scary Show's Deadline News.
Want to take your haunt to a new dimension of terror? Then let Dark Imaginings conjure up some ghoulish graphics and web design services for your home, haunt, or crypt. Since 2007, professional and home haunters alike have trusted our award-winning and dedicated skeleton crew to make their nightmares come true. Whether you need graphic design services, logos, websites, spooky visuals, or creepy changing portraits, we can help your business look its scary best. To see more of our products and services, drop by darkimaginings.com. Let us help you get ahead of your competition.
I'm here at Cedar Point at the Midnight Syndicate's Conspiracy of Shadows show on October 7th. I have Mr. Gavin Gaska, and who, as everybody knows on the show, is the Swedish bikini model of the show because no one ever sees him. And we got Mr. Ryan Harris, who is the stage manager of the show, and Ed's wandering around being the social butterfly that he is. Guys, that show was awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Now, my question is, one thing I noticed compared to last year, the intensity level was much more than the previous year. Was that a conscious effort or something that was, as it rolled along, you guys decided you needed to bring it up a notch?
Yeah, I think we really did want to take it up a notch and kind of move things along a little faster, give the audiences something new. Pull them along for the ride in a more intense way, I guess.
Ed's not awake yet.
No, I can't add anything more to that. That's perfect.
Okay. Now, Ryan, you said you've been involved with the show since the first year. What has been the biggest challenge for you compared to the first year to this year working with these two chuckleheads?
I really haven't had any challenges.
Okay, we're done with you.
Yeah. No, I was here for their first run of this in 2014, and I was coming at it from a fan's perspective. When Cedar Point announced that they were doing Midnight Syndicate Live for Halloweekends in the theater that I was already stage managing, I immediately jumped on everybody that I could about being a part of this show, because being a fan, knowing what their music's about, knowing what their world is like, I had to be a part of bringing it to Cedar Point. And so from that standpoint, this has never been work or a challenge for me. I get to come to work and hang out with a band that I am a huge fan of.
Now, being a fan and as well as friends of theirs as well makes it easier.
Absolutely.
I know this guy over here, Ed's a slave driver. I mean,
oh,
I
awful.
And Gavin, God, when I was working on the track for Dead Manor, I just wanted to tell him to go pound sand. But anyway, this isn't about me. One thing I noticed is a big change up in the songs and a lot of differences compared to what was on the recordings. Gavin, you were playing a lot more percussion than before. And I noticed that Ashley, the vocalist, was used a lot more than the previous year. Was that something that was a natural progression? How did you guys decide how you wanted to approach the songs as compared to how they are in the recordings?
Yeah, I think certain songs just needed something else added to them. Probably one of the biggest examples is our show opener, which is from Monsters of Legend. It kind of got rebuilt in a lot of ways to be a little bit more intense and kind of darker than it is on the recording because it's a show opener. You want to kind of hit people right off the bat and make a, show them what the show is all about, make it representative. As far as the vocals, it's just kind of whatever worked. When we needed vocals in a song, we just kind of worked them in and stuff. Certain songs, like Habergast Asylum, thrilled to be playing that. That's always been one of my favorite songs that Ed's written. But that one really, really suggested itself right off the bat. It's just a natural vocal kind of ready song, so...
It really is, yeah. And it's been the idea when we're coming into this is like, we got to step up everything for this year. It's our third year doing the show, so we just went through everything from the minute you before you walk into the theater, and once you walk into the theater, straight to when you were leaving the theater, everything had to be taken up a notch. So that was like and so the music, the arrangements, the song selection, everything that went across the board, and I know we were talking earlier about the set list mixing up, and that's Gavin's big thing. He, you know, it says, I remember asking him, hey, can we maybe do Grizzly Reminder again? And he's like, no.
Yeah.
Switching up all new songs. And it makes a lot of sense. We have, like, what, 17 albums of music. So it is cool to be able to give. There's plenty of stuff. No reason to play the same.
Yeah, why not give people that know our music, why not give them something new to listen to? People that don't know our music, why not give them something new to listen to? They might get exposed to a release that they might not have thought to pick up, like Dungeons & Dragons, for example.
Hold on, you're going to... People don't have all of them? Okay, you're not a completist, then.
Oh, there's a lot, man. There's a lot to pick up.
There is a lot. But yeah, Dungeons & Dragons is a good example. We use a lot off that in this album, in this show, we use a lot off of the Dungeons & Dragons album. You wouldn't think.
Delirium, too. We went back to that. It was kind of a natural thing, you know, when we were putting the show together. Certain songs just kind of suggested themselves as being very good fits. And it wasn't like we were consciously trying to say, okay, we need one song from Bourne, we need one song from Monsters. You know, it wasn't like that at all. It's just whatever worked, and it just happened that those two CDs, you know, a lot of songs ended up working from them.
And if you guys want to talk, please, by all means, don't shut up on our account. I mean,
I think the finest cast and crew. We've had great luck with all of our cast and crews. I don't want to diss anybody. You know,
how many cast members do you have this year compared to last year?
Cast and crew. What's that?
How many cast members this year compared to last year?
Oh boy. I am bad with that, with the counts.
I think we're at 12. Are we at 12?
Yeah, there's. He counts as two, though, because he's a stage manager.
Oh, you're a stage manager and an actor. Brian does. Double IMDb credit.
Yes.
Yes, you do.
You do, yeah. We don't want to give away too much, but yeah, Ryan is much more than just the stage manager. He's like, so yeah.
And you have your daughters in the show as well.
Yeah, I got to do that.
And my wife and I were back here watching, and she's like, well, that song that that Ashley's singing, she's like, what album is that off? So I told her what album, and she's like, okay, I want to hear that. Well, the vocals are not on that song. Well, how am I supposed to hear the vocals that are not on that song? Thanks a lot, dude.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm glad that, you know.
Well, you guys have got 2 weeks left, and, I mean, this started in September.
Right.
What has been the highlight so far?
Wow.
The crowd response?
The crowd response has been fantastic.
People are really emphatic in saying that this is the best one yet.
Yeah.
Like, they're really going out of their way. Like, last year, they'd say, oh, I like this one. Or like, oh, this was a lot of fun, but I like the first year better.
Yeah.
Now, everybody just comes up to it and says, yeah, this is the best thing, the best show that we've ever done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, an enormous amount of people are saying that. Well, Ryan's our guy.
That guy over there.
Yes, Ryan, and when people are leaving, Ryan's the one that... What do? Do you just kind of watch when they're leaving?
I just kind of slowly walk as everyone else is leaving the theater and just kind of listen in on conversations, and it's always...
Okay, so restraining order goes to you. Got it.
There are already many. There are some schools I can't... Anyway.
So that is why you left Florida. Got it.
No! Too many schools.
This just got creepy.
Yeah.
In a totally different way.
Okay.
People, I think the response is, people definitely think it's the best one. So if you've been wanting to check out the Midnight Syndicate show and haven't, well, I mean, I guess that's, I'd say come out to this one.
Yeah.
You only got two more weeks.
And
if you have seen our shows before, definitely come out to this one, because you're going to see and hear some things that you haven't heard the last couple times.
And
you will see things reminiscent of years past. There are a lot of references and Easter eggs in the show that have referenced the last two incarnations of the show.
Exactly. That's a good point. We did want to kind of throw back to, you know, what we did in the previous years and stuff, and kind of tie it all together and give people something. Oh yeah, I remember that. You know.
Yeah, I noticed that with some of the clips you were showing, and then I saw Chris in the video. I'm like, there's my buddy.
Yeah, that's great. Bringing a little bit of everything, a little bit Chris from Dead Matter. You've been talking. So yeah, this is a big. Everybody get together.
Now, I'll wrap this up. I know that it's too early to tell what's going to happen next year. One question a lot of people are asking is, obviously, you're going to do it again next year. When are we going to see another album?
Yeah, we've been getting asked that a lot, actually, and we understand why. Just the whole production schedule of doing a show like this, it just takes so much time to from the idea stage all the way through the filming and the, you know, the rehearsing and getting everything together, we can't do both, you know, at the same time, kind of. So it's like you have to choose one or the other.
What, you got a day job or something?
Yeah.
Actually, oh, no, well, never mind.
It's too much. There's too much. It's too much. Yeah, I mean, it's like from...
Dude, every time I turn around, you guys were releasing something. Come on. Yeah, yeah. Come on. What, are you getting old or something?
Well, no, it's either a show. It's either a show or an album. That's for sure. I can guarantee people. I mean, just so that people aren't disappointed. You know,
well,
what I mean,
yeah.
It's
like, that's, you know, the thing is, we want to make. I mean, we
barely just getting this show together. It was, this year was enormous. Certainly the most challenging show. We've
Well,
ever
your tour schedule with Vinyl Arcade was just. Are just ridiculous, dude. I mean, God.
No, that's nothing. That's just on weeknights and stuff like that. But people that are in the northeastern Ohio area should check out Vinyl Arcade. That's vinylarcade.com.
Oh, God. Listen to this. Oh, pimping yourself like a $10 hooker with a cleft lip and a cold sore. Jesus.
No.
No, but it's a good point. I mean, because it's not just, you know, us getting up on stage and maybe picking a couple new songs and doing the same old thing over and over and over
right.
again. We want to give everybody something new. We yeah. want to take it up a notch, take it in a different direction and stuff. So mm-hmm. to do that, it just requires a lot of planning and kind of kicking around ideas. And by the time you do that, you know, it's months have gone by.
Plus, with the stage design, I mean, you got a completely different stage setup than last year, which I think is just gorgeous.
Well, you know, it's going to change again.
Yeah.
If we do a show again, we will not be able to use most of what you see here. We're going to have to change things up in a significant way. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. But we know that people want us to do new music. We're certainly not done writing albums. Oh, my, we have so many more themes that we have yet to mm-hmm. explore. But, you know, just, you know, certain things dictate certain things. And we'll see. Go. We can't tell you. We don't know what's going to happen.
You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
We don't know
wait a minute. You have a soccer game.
I do have a soccer game. That might get rained out, though. That might get rained out.
Well, then there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
You can sleep in. All right. Well, guys, if anybody, obviously, and this is, you know, what we call the plug, if anybody wants to find out more about you guys, obviously, where is your presence online?
MidnightSyndicate.com, and you'll see all our social media from there. We're very active on Facebook. That's probably where we're most active. But we absolutely do things on Twitter and Instagram. And, yeah, you can find links to all the music and everything that we're doing from there. And then GavinGoska.com for all yeah. Gavin's
I've been podcasts. Following your website with all the stuff you've been releasing from your archives.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Thanks. Yeah, things have been a little slow. It just, you know, it gets crazy. I do the convention thing during the year. And mm-hmm. between that, my summer schedule is nuts. And then getting ready for this, of course, you know, I haven't been able to get back to that. But, yeah, rest assured, you'll be seeing some news.
Any chance in the future of another Parlemuse?
Yeah. Definitely.
There you go. All right. Well, Ryan, Gavin, Ed, thank you so much for your time. You got family waiting for you. This has been an awesome show. And everybody, come out, all the Big Scary Show fans, come out, check out Midnight Syndicate Live every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for the rest of October. If you don't, well, you're not going to. This brings up a question. Are you guys filming this at all?
Yeah, everybody wants a DVD of the show, yeah.
That's okay. That's a question they're not going to answer.
It's being recorded. Everything that we have done since day one has been recorded. It's just a matter of...
Because I think a DVD of different, you know, songs from the three different years would be... I mean, just because of talking as a fan. Anyway, guys, thank you for your time. I'll let you go and enjoy time with your family. This is the Haunch Mentalist. I'm out of here. Now I can go to save my voice.
That is an incredible motion picture. An entire town goes berserk when a giant underwater creature attacks all human life. That is a frightening experience. Don't miss that.
Are you afraid this haunt season? Afraid of long lines of dissatisfied customers just at your ticket booth? Afraid of all the processing fees and hassle with credit cards? Are you afraid to make that jump into online ticketing? Well, take the leap. Ticket Leap. Ticket Leap will give you online options for your customer. Beautiful event pages to give every single ticketing option you have now and loads of possibility. Smart tools to spread the word, engage with your customers, and connect to social media with great great, simple payment processing and the friendly customer support to go with it. Do things you haven't dreamed of. Hey, what's a selfie ticket? Check out TicketLeap.com. They're going to show you what to do. And no haunt's too big or too small for them to process. You're going to have a beautiful event page, even if you have a home haunt. Hey, they have options for free events that you may have. And what better way to collect donations for a community? Tickets under $5. The fee's only 25 cents. Find out what TicketLeap has to offer to you. TicketLeap.com.
Broadcasting to you from the darkest reaches of the earth, this is A Haunt Minute. And now, with this week's commentary, Storm.
Alright, so is it just me, or is like social media bringing out the extra stupid in people this year? It's very weird, and I mean, we see it, you know, year after year, especially if you're doing the social media from The Haunt, you'll just get these really weird goofball questions that, you know, you're like, are you people serious? Are you trolling me? What's going on here? You know, stuff like, hey, I see your haunt is open, is closed on Mondays, but is it open this Monday? You know, it's just ridiculous stuff. Hey, you know, is your haunt scary? Well, it's, you know, it says screams of evil. Probably. And it just seems this year there seems to be more of it. It's some of the just more simple questions and things like, all right, so you want to ask us on Facebook, did you read any of the Facebooks? Did you look at our website? Have you picked up a brochure? You know, how much does your $10 haunt cost? That type of thing. It's very, very weird. And it's not even just limited to our customers this year. You know, even on the different message boards and, you know, places where you got haunters and haunter communities, there's been a rash of just like, I want to make a clown character. How do I do that? Type of things. I want to make my haunt scarier. Well, okay, can you elaborate? Can you tell us a little bit more about your haunt? Maybe what you have to work with or anything? You know, do you just want us to do all the work for you? I'm pretty sure that's not what haunting's about. You know, it gets me thinking, you know, I don't believe people are actually this dumb or this trolling. No, I think people are, you know, doing these very simplistic questions and just throwing anything out there, stick it against the walls, because it's the internet and everyone will have a different opinion. And some of those opinions will agree with you. So I think people are actually asking these questions, doing these simplistic statements, just to get people to agree with them, no matter what position they might have, or, you know, a little gratification on their opinion on it. And it's weird, but it's happening. So before you go and ask a question, you know, out there, don't feed into that. Get out there, stay scary, and, you know, throw in a little detail, throw in a, you know, a little thought to a question, show the effort that you want put into it, and other people will put effort into the answers. You know, it goes for customers, goes for haunters, goes for all that. You know, the more educated you seem out there, the better experience it is for everybody, and a better experience in haunting is a scarier experience. So until next time, keep every minute scary.
Tune in next episode for another Haunt Minute. And in the meantime, share your opinions on the Big Scary Show Facebook page and on Twitter at Big Scary Store.
Hi, this is Josh Gates from Travel Channel's Expedition Unknown, reminding you to send all hate mail to storm@bigscaryshow.com.
The Night Keep, the Macabre Waltz, on the Big Scary Show. Big Scary Show.
And ladies and gentlemen, it is that time of the Big Scary Show where not only is it the Round Table of Terror, it's time for our semi-regular event, the 13 Questions of Doom, everyone's favorite game show, hosted by our very own Storm. So, I'm going to hand over the microphone to Storm. Take it away.
Thank you very much, Jerry, and welcome everyone to the 13 Questions of Doom. This will be a McLaughlin Group roundtable type game show where our other hosts will be answering questions that I have for them, and I have preconceived answers, which they may or may not get, and will get points based on however the hell I feel like giving points, mostly based on their answers and how they relate to the correct answer, which only I and podcasting cat Nicodemus knows. So, before we introduce our contestants tonight, we'll let you know what tonight's theme. This is the 8th round of 13 Questions of Doom, and it's the Ghosts Go to the Movies! Yay! Very apropos for our off-air conversation before. And first up tonight is Badger. Badger, introduce yourself.
Hello, everybody. My name is Drew Badger, and it is a pleasure to be here, Storm.
And our next contestant tonight is the man formerly known as the Unknown Scare Actor, currently known as Autopsy, or I forget which one you're going with right now.
I'm using Meat Hook Jim right now.
Meat Hook Jim. Meat Hook Jim.
And ironically enough, you got that name from the 13 Questions of Doom, I believe.
I did. Might.
Awesome. Jim, anything else to add?
Yeah, Badger's still a wanker.
Okay, we'll go with that. That fits a little bit more this time. And last but not least, our contestant number 3, our current defending champion, Jerry Vane.
Actually, it's not Meat Hook Jim. He's gone vegan, so it's Meatless Jim.
Tofu Jim.
Tofu Jim. Toe Jam.
All right, so we might as well just jump right into this one. So round eight, the Ghosts Go to the Movies. First question, and we're going to give this one to Jim. Jim, what is your favorite horror film?
My favorite horror film. God. Anything with Badger in it? No.
That sounds just creepy.
I am a big fan of the Alien franchise, so I'm going to go with the original Alien.
That's not bad. I'll give you a point for that one. Jerry, what about you? Your favorite horror film?
I'm actually a huge fan of the original Wolfman with Lon Chaney.
Ooh, I'll give you a point for that one. That is a good one. Not good would have been the remake. And Badger, you, your favorite horror film?
You know, this is a trick question because I don't watch horror movies, but I do love the Universal Monsters, and when they're on Svengoolie, I can't go wrong with that. Original Godzilla.
Okay, I was going to give you like a full point, but you cut out and then said Godzilla was a horror film, and I don't know about that. So we'll give you half a point. So we'll give you some credit there. But all right, so we're off to a start here. Not too bad. The not watching horror movies should be a struggle for Badger, but entertainment for the rest of us. Well, let's jump off and, let's give this one right back to Badger and give the other guys time to really come up with a good idea. Badger, what is the best horror movie franchise?
Did we lose him?
We may have a connection issue here.
Well, yeah, we do have a connection. Let's move on to somebody else.
All right, Jerry, how about you? Best horror movie franchise?
These are considered horror films, but at the same time, they're not. But I'm going to say the Abbott and Costello Meet the Monsters series. Meet the Wolfman, Abbott and Costello meet, Meet Frankenstein, Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy, and the last one I just went blank on.
So for you, how do they qualify as horror movies?
Because you've got the Universal Monsters in them. That right there alone. And there's actually a lot of horror in it if you think about it, when you look at all the interaction with the characters.
This is fantastic, because I know the next, 11 questions, so we're going well on that one. But Jerry gets a point. While we still wait for Badger, Jim, how about you? What is the best horror movie franchise?
Well, I would have to go with Friday the 13th.
Just because of the name, or
no? Friday the 13th, Jason killing people in every possible way, in some fantastical ways, even taking him into outer space. I mean, they really stretched it, but it's enduring. It's one of those franchises that everybody talks about.
Ooh, you were going strong there. There's something that really hurt your score on that one, and we'll talk about that in a later question, but we'll give you half a point. You got there, you sort of went with it. Badger, are you back yet?
I can hear you guys.
All right, Badger. We're still on question number two. The other hosts have answered, and it's time for your answer. What is the best horror movie franchise?
Without a doubt, Halloween, especially given the new one that's coming out and all the buzz that everybody is just raving that it's the best one since the original.
Awesome. The correct answer for this one was actually a wild card answer. Depends on how passionately you defended your choice. And Jim got off to a slow start with defending it, and we'll approach in another question how he really lost half a point. But Badger and Jerry each get a full point on that one. So, yay. So, now we're going to go to a fun one. Jim, you're up first on this one. What is the biggest horror flop?
Saturday the 14th.
Hmm.
Okay. All right. We'll give you a point on that one. Badger, what about you? The biggest horror flop?
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes 2.
There was even a 2?
Yeah, I think wow. They went up to 4.
Wow, you're getting a point for that one.
Had John Astin in it.
Ooh, wow. Jerry, what about you? Biggest horror flop?
Oh, God. What was it? Vampirella with Roger Daltrey.
Oh, God. I forgot about that.
That movie was terrible.
Yeah, is that bad? Her outfit couldn't redeem it?
No.
Oh, wow.
No. It was terrible.
That emphatic no coming from Jerry Vane is definitely worth a point. What would have gotten 2 or 3 points on this one is definitely Universal's Dark Universe. Any of those movies currently.
Oh, good
dear
point.
God, what a flop. Oh, man. I watched Mummy Impossible the other night. The first half of the movie was good. And then
Impossible.
And then it just went someplace else. I don't know what the hell happened. I mean, I think there's Russell Crowe there, but he's really fat, and he was, I don't know what was, it was weird. There were steampunk shots, and the first half of the movie is great. After the plane crash, it turned it off.
I almost expected you to say Leprechaun 4 in space, but there'd already been an in space reference, I believe, from Friday the 13th from a previous question.
Yeah, I watched The Mummy for free. I think I would have shot myself if I'd have paid for it.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say Plan 9 from Outer Space, because that was just a dreadful flop. But that movie was actually pretty endearing.
Yeah,
it's bad. Monster. It's bad in a good way.
You also have to think flops is how much people lost a lot of money. And just the whole we're going to make a Dark Universe thing. It was funny because I'd heard about the Dark Universe, and they are having the title cards for The Mummy coming up. And I say something, yes, Marvel's Dark Universe. And Allison's like, what? And then the title card for, I'm sorry, not Marvel's, Universal's Dark Universe comes up. And she's like, how the hell did you know that? I go, I can't believe they went full out on this. Oh, is that bad? All right, so. After 3 questions of our 13 questions of doom, I need to set up a total, but Jerry has a slight lead with 3 points. Jim has 2.5 points, and Badger has 2.5 points. Yay! So let me make sure that I can keep track of this. So the next question, we might as well just have Jerry go first on this one. Jerry, you might like this one. Which of these three, black and white horror, 80s horror, or the modern ultra gore?
Black and white. It definitely the black and white gives your imagination more to work with. But when you've got some of the black and white horror done in an 80s style, which there have been a few films, and I'm drawing complete blank on what they were because they were so freaking bad. But you get that 80s horror, you know, with the black and white thing, but everybody's wearing that really bad 80s outfits. Just gold.
Interesting. Jim, what about you? Black and white horror, 80s horror, or modern ultra gore?
Well, technically I'm a fan of all three because they all have their endearing qualities. But the ultra gore of the modern age, people want more. I mean, it's just like when you go to a haunted attraction. People are expecting more. They're expecting more gore. They're expecting more monsters. Bigger, better, newer, different. So I'm going to go with the ultra gore.
Interesting. Badger, what about you? Black and white gore?
I love black and white, but even one step further, black and white silent films. Phantom of the Opera, Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, the original 1910 Frankenstein. That I will stop and watch at any time if I'm channel surfing.
Yeah, I'm going to give you 3 points on that one because you pretty much hit on the right answer and went with it. While 80s horror and modern ultra gore have their places and are good, it is definitely black and white horror, which is above and beyond. And the biggest reason being, well, if you've ever seen a Vincent Price or Bela Lugosi film. So that round, Badger gets 3 points. You know, because just hitting it on the head. Jerry, you get 2 points. And Jim, it was a passionate answer, so we'll give you half a point.
Let me just say that this coming, the guy that gets 3 points doesn't watch horror films.
Yeah, I know. Pretty awful, isn't it? But we got time to redeem it. But he had a great answer. Had a great answer. All right, Jim, you're going first on this one.
Blow it.
So, Jim, the next question, and this could be just as tricky, fast zombies or slow zombies?
I am going to go with fast zombies because they're harder to defend against.
Okay, well, we'll give you a point on that one. Badger, fast zombies or slow zombies?
Fast zombies do not exist. Must be slow. A pile of slow zombies slowly descending upon a place has to be one of the most terrifying things ever.
Okay, we'll give you a point. Jerry, fast zombies or slow zombies?
Well, considering zombies are dead, they really shouldn't be moving anyway, but I'm going to go slow zombies because with Night of the Living Dead, that's where all the fear came from. You don't know what the unexpected is.
All right, we'll give everybody a point that round. There are actually two correct answers. It could be fast or it could be slow. If you had said fast zombies because they're scarier, you are correct. If you said slow zombies because, well, zombie camp is the funniest thing known to mankind and makes the whole zombie genre, that would also be correct for bonus points. But no, pretty good answers on that one. Question number 6 before we take our little break. How would you survive a horror movie? Badger, you're up first.
I think you dropped out again.
I think staying silent, we might consider that one. Jerry, what about you? How would you survive a horror movie?
Are we talking being in an actual horror movie?
If
are we talking just watching one?
Well, no, if you're in a horror movie, how would you do it so you could survive?
Everything I've learned from surviving horror in a horror movie is how I would apply it to being in the horror movie. And plus, you've also got the, you know, if you've watched you know, Zombieland, you've got the rules of survival right there.
Okay. Jim, how would you survive a horror movie?
Feed Badger to the zombies. No.
Hey.
10 points.
No, I've thought about this question actually a lot in the past, and I came up with an answer, and it's quite simply this. I'm not. I'm going to die a gruesome death in a horror movie because I'm fat, I'm slow, and I'm out of shape.
That is fantastic honesty. Badger, now that you're back again and, you know, disappearing and haven't been killed in our horror movie, how would you survive a horror movie?
The smartest reason to, or smartest way to survive a zombie movie or a horror movie, don't open that door. Don't have sex. Go off by yourself and basically call the police or drive away as soon as something weird starts happening.
Not too bad. All right. Badger and Jim both get full points on that one. Jerry gets half a point because he pretty much answered the question with the question and then redeemed himself a little. But the actual correct answer on that is always vacation someplace with cell service. Because a lot of what Jim said is true. We would not be able to outrun. We'd be dead for all the other reasons. But, you know, if we vacation someplace with cell service, I think that might solve every horror monster movie out there. All right. Why don't we take a quick little break before we jump into question number 7. So, you know, let's hear these wonderful commercial messages or happy fun time break time.
In 1897, Dr. Alexander Hammond arrived at an institution for the criminally insane, only to discover the unsolved murders of several guards.
Drivers, where are we?
Jerry Vane takes you into Black Moon Asylum, a twisted abyss of torment, madness, and the horrifying mystery of Patient 292.
Time for your medication.
Moon Asylum, a symphonic journey into darkness from instrumentalist Jerry Vane. Download Black Moon Asylum at jerryvane.com, iTunes, cdbaby.com, Amazon MP3, and your favorite download site.
And we're back to the 13 questions of doom, and let's take it away, host Storm.
All right, let's recap through the first 6 questions. Right now, Mr. I Don't Watch Horror Movies, Badger, is in a small lead with 7.5 points.
Just a lose.
Absolutely. You know, the second half questions are worth more or less, and, you know, the answers get wilder. Jerry is right behind with 6.5 points. And Jim is not out of this. He's at a full 5 points. So there's still a struggle. This is not a runaway by any chance. And Jim, we're going to give you... Sorry, I lost track of my own questions. We're going to give you a shot at... first shot at question number 7. Question number 7 is... what is your favorite horror killer weapon?
Oh, boy, that is a tough one. There's so many of them out there, from the, you know, the obvious to the outrageous. So I, you know, man.
This is why these are not the 13 questions of mild confusion or, you know, slightly scary. These are 13 questions of doom.
Doom, yes. Doom. My favorite, I've got one, and it's from a very obscure movie. The horror weapon of choice for me is a pair of running spikes.
Okay. Yeah, anything else with that? Like golf shoes? Did somebody just get golf shoed to death? Ooh, look, I got stepped on. Ooh, I fell down and the killer walked over me in vital areas. More than little 2-inch things. Wow, I'm talking you out of points. You got to turn this around.
I saw a horror film on Creature Feature when I was a kid, and the killer turned into a half, you know, he was like a werewolf type character. He grabbed the coach in the high school gym, threw him down, put on a pair of running spikes, and stomped him to death.
Wow.
Okay. All right.
Storm, just remember that if he doesn't win.
Yeah, no, that could be the way. I don't think I'll take away points for that, but okay. Badger, your favorite horror killer weapon?
Gosh, I know it would be too obvious to say knife, axe, or machete, so I'm going to go with...
Machete.
I'm going to go with claws and teeth. A lot of werewolves, a lot of monsters, a lot of demons, a lot of creatures just literally grabbing somebody and ripping them asunder.
That's not too bad. I like that one. That's
Pyramid Head, Silent Hill, skin them, and then...
Not too bad.
Alien, Bishop, rip them apart.
Sherry, what about you? Favorite horror killer weapon? If you can take the lead.
Vagina bubbles.
What?
Vagina bubbles. Jim, you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
There was a Japanese horror film. It was the Vagina Bubbles from Hell. And this girl tried to... Oh, my God. It looked like something out of a bad soap rave.
Yes.
Vagina bubbles. And the guy was killed by vagina bubbles.
Because that is still probably better... weapons and lawn shoes. I'm giving you a point. I'm actually going to go in there and add it.
Master Gil can't help this woman at all.
Wow. We've just gone a place. I don't know.
The correct answer is machete. Then I'm just going to die.
My ribs hurt. My second weapon of choice would be the handheld sickle that killed Jerry in Ghost House.
Actually, it killed Dawn, and I got hacked up with an axe.
Okay. Oh, way to spoil it, guys.
You probably should have. I don't know if we spoiled it for anybody. I think our entire audience also just went to go get a drink too. So. That'll probably be a later round table, or maybe even a later 13 questions of Doom.
Oh my God.
The actual correct answer was a chainsaw or any other garden tool. So Jim, if you'd gone with a scythe, you might have gotten some points. Jerry, we'll give you 1 point for creativity, and Badger get 1.5 points on that one.
Death by Weed Whacker.
They've done that in one. That is one of my favorites. They've done that in a Friday the 13th, which was fantastic. The guy just screaming, and the weed whacker goes in his chest. I mean, the thing wouldn't do that unless he had a metal spike on it, but it was fantastic. I'm like, oh my God, he used a weed whacker, and I can't for the life of me remember if it was gas or electric, which is even. Jerry, we're going to give you a question number 8 first. Jerry, what is an indicator that a horror franchise will now suck?
Well, gee, the Dark Universe right there with Tom Cruise was proof enough.
All right, Tom Cruise, we'll give you one on that one. Jim, what about you? What's a major indicator that a horror franchise will now suck?
Well, remakes. Now, obviously, with the new Halloween coming out, there's a lot of good things being said about that. But case in point, when they remade Nightmare on Elm Street, ugh.
Okay. I'll give you Nightmare on Elm Street. I'll give you a point because that's a good reference of a problem and it's sucking. But you know, I gotta say, I liked the Dawn of the Dead remake. I mean, that's a great ass horror movie. Badger, what about you? What is an indicator that a horror franchise will now suck?
Frank Stallone.
Wow. Wow, just, man, you know, I set that softball up for you. You could have knocked it out of the park, but you just had to go hurting on Frank Stallone. You know, Stallone. Yeah.
Well deserved.
I'm from the Philly area, so we don't give you any points on that one. The guy cries. He needs a paycheck. You want to go shame him for bagging at a Trader Joe's next? I mean, oh. No,
Ted McGinn.
No.
McGinley.
No. Okay. Nope, you can't recover on that one, Badger. The actual indicator that a horror franchise will now suck is one of two things. Either it takes place in space,
ooh,
Leprechaun, Hellraiser, Jason Friday the 13th. Yeah, oh God, no, awful when they go in space. Or if Rob Zombie is directing this sequel.
Oh, that did cross my mind.
I actually like 31.
31's not a sequel. Rob Zombie can direct things and do well, but if he directs a sequel, awful. I mean, Devil's Rejects was okay,
yeah,
but it was no House of a Thousand Corpses.
Which was also a remake.
Well, but not a sequel. And it,
okay, fair enough.
Yeah, but no, Halloween was the remake, which, you know, the first one he did, all right, we could see where it's going. The second one was just, what the hell did you just do?
Yeah, but, you know, he did great with The Haunted World of El Super Bisto.
Great, but again, Rob Zombie directs a sequel. Then you know it's gone off the rails there.
Right, right.
All right. Jim, question number 9. Best horror soundtrack.
Ooh. You know, I'm going to have to go with Halloween.
Okay.
It's, you know, John Carpenter, you know, he created the film, he wrote the soundtrack. It is, I mean, everybody knows the soundtrack in some way, shape, or form. It's
the original Halloween?
The original Halloween.
Okay.
I'm not talking about any remakes, I'm talking about the original Halloween soundtrack.
Okay.
Everybody knows it.
All right. That's not too bad of an answer. Badger, what about you? Best horror soundtrack?
I should go the suck-up route and say Jerry Vane in Ghost House, but I won't. Mike Oldfield, Tubular Bells for The Exorcist.
Okay, well, we'll give you a point. I thought that Tubular Bells was the NFL song.
No.
Oh, no.
And if you've ever listened to the 23-minute version on YouTube, it's brilliant.
Okay, and I think Badger cut out at the right time there.
Hey.
Cherry, what about you? Best horror soundtrack?
My favorite actually is the soundtrack for Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Whoa!
That soundtrack set the movie.
Nice. Jerry, I'm giving you 3 points on that one because not only is that a great answer, it's one of the right answers. That's right, Bram Stoker's Dracula. Fantastic. Not only because, you know, it set the tone for a movie is great, but you can listen to that album by itself.
Right, right, exactly.
I mean, you can listen from start to end, and you don't even have to see, you know, the movie doesn't necessarily have to be the thing going through your mind, but it tells a story with itself, and it's a lot of soundtracks are just awful when you listen to them. You know, like RoboCop. Ooh, I got the RoboCop soundtrack. What the hell is this?
I will say that one, and you know, a lot of people, this movie gets a lot of crap from people because Tom Cruise is in it, and Brad Pitt's in it. But the soundtrack music for Interview with a Vampire, take those two out of the picture completely and just listen to the music. Amazing. It's you get the feel, the flow and feel of every scene for each track. I mean, those are the two soundtrack albums I listen to the most.
That's fantastic. You know, I'd go with that one with that defense too. But yes, the correct answers were Bram Stoker's Dracula, or if you wanted to go the suck up route and say Dead Matter, I'd give you points for that one too. But
that crossed my mind.
But Jerry, you definitely get the bonus points on that one, and you've pulled ahead in the lead while we go into our last couple of questions. We're going into question number 10. So, you know, we're going through. You're not too far behind, Badger. Jim, you got to jump on here and get some of these, or else it's you know, going to be basement duty again. question number 10, Jerry, what's the best first date horror movie?
Best first date horror movie. Stupid as it sounds, and this actually happened to me, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Okay,
seriously.
That one, that's a pretty good one. That's a pretty good one. Paul Rubens, you know. Hey.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was never.
It was exactly. Ouch.
What's fascinating is we probably have a whole generation of listeners who think that Sarah Michelle Gellar was in that movie.
Right.
Savages.
Jim, what about you? Best first date horror movie?
The Wizard of Oz.
Flying monkeys are terrifying.
I couldn't even think of a joke for that one.
No, seriously. Scream.
Oh, really? Huh, yeah. Interesting. Badger, what about you? Best first date horror movie?
Army of Darkness. It's got comedy, Bruce Campbell. What else do you need?
Oh, I'm giving a good point on that one. That one's good, but it might be a little tough to explain. And, you know, Bruce Campbell and Army of Darkness, you might go into that one. Your date might be thinking, oh, God, what, where are you going? No correct answer. Scream is definitely one of them. Jim gets 3 points on that one. The other one, which would be a good first day horror movie and probably is for many of our listeners, Jaws.
Ooh.
Mmm. So, yeah, Jim's back in this one with getting 3 points on that round. Badger and Jerry each got 1 point. A quick little point recap as we go to the lightning round, the super bonus questions, questions 11 through 13. Jerry is currently leading with 12.5 points. Badger has 11 points, and Jim's right in there with 10 points. All right, bonus lightning round. All the answers are more ridiculous than before, because I start running out of ideas when I get to about question number 9. Question number 11, Badger, you are first. Most underused horror monster?
Leprechaun.
You know there's like 8 Leprechaun movies, right?
And nobody but you knows that.
No, anyone who's, you know, lost the remote control while watching Sci-Fi Channel on a Saturday around St. Patrick's Day knows that. Jim, what about you? Most underused horror monster?
The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Ooh.
Damn, that's a good answer.
That is a very, very good answer. Ooh, we'll give you 2 points on that one. You're right back in this mix. Jerry, you know, hey, the ultimate right answer is still out there. What is the most underused horror monster?
The Crawling Eye.
Oh, God.
Wow. That's pretty good. We'll give you a point on that one. That's not too bad.
That's season 1 MST3K.
Not too bad answers. Definitely we need some more movies on both of those. But the actual answer is, of course, Chupacabras. Yeah, Chupacabras need to be used much more. Not used well enough. In either way, you have the Caribbean island Chupacabra, which is more alien and lizard-like, and then you have the, you know, American Southwest Chupacabra, which is, you know, a mangy dog with blue eyes and eats goats and people and stuff. You know, either one can go. Jerry, let's see if you can build on your lead with question number 12. What's more effective in a horror movie, your narration or the title cards? You know, the ones that tell you, you know, Spoonerville, 1972.
Narration or the title cards? Well, considering most horror films don't have narration, neither actually. How many horror films do you see with narration? And other than here's the title of the movie, most, other than Amityville 1978, the title cards don't really give much. You got to let your imagination. That's what makes it scarier by not knowing what's going on and understanding it.
Okay, Badger, what about you? More effective narration?
0 points.
Yes. Badger, what about you? Narration or title cards?
And I can't give you an exact example of any of this, but anytime somebody says, let's go do this, it'll be a great idea. And suddenly you hear, but it was not a great idea. So I guess narration.
You think that's more effective? Okay.
Why not? It sets up good foreshadowing. And lets people know that these people are probably dead in the next 20 minutes anyway.
All right, definitely a brave way to go. Jim, what about you? Narration or title cards?
I'm going to go with title cards because they give your mind a picture of where they are and what's going to happen or what is happening. So I'm going with title cards.
And that's the right answer for 2 points. And it doesn't have to be much. A date, a time, someplace in, anything helps us. Because it sets it up without them having to sit there and explain it. No, I'm watching a horror movie. I want to see people being murdered, not for them to explain why the hell they got there. We know there's no logical sense for you getting there. Thank you, title cards. And a narration just doesn't seem to work very well. All right, let me tell you a story. This is how I caught the, what the hell is it? The Jeeper Creeper guy. Oh, and then, you know, then you go to title card. You always need the title cards. All right. So that was question 12. We are at question 13. And boy, this is a slobber knocker so far. Somehow, pulling it out in the last three questions, Jim is in the lead with 14 wow. points. Jerry is not far behind with 13.5 points. But still, anybody's game with Badger with 12 points. And Badger, I'm going to do something I usually don't do. I'll give you a choice. You can go first or last for the final question.
He dropped out again.
And he dropped
I'm right in. Here.
Ah, Badger, would you? I'm doing something a little different because you know, you're a couple points behind. I'm going to let you choose. Okay. Do you want to answer this question first or last?
I will go last.
All right. Jerry, best horror movie setting, scene setting. Best horror movie scene setting.
Long shot of a dark field. Castle up on the hill. Lightning, thunder,
interesting.
And the camera slowly panning its way across up to the castle, and something unexpected jumping out that has absolutely nothing to do with what's going on in the background.
Okay, we went full storyboard on that one. Not bad. Jim, what about you? Best horror movie scene setting?
A dark gothic castle or cathedral is a great way to start a setting, in my opinion.
Okay, we'll give you some on that. Badger, the best horror movie scene setting.
Suburbia, USA, because you know that that's where all the teenagers that are eventually going to die are located, and it could be anywhere in the country, but you know that town probably is hiding a deep, dark secret.
Boy, this was a close one. And, you know, Jim and Jerry had some good answers. Badger, you got a full point on yours. Jim, just not enough. Jerry, you've won today 15 total points. The actual correct answer was basement or graveyard. So you, with that open field before getting to the castle, probably just edged it out for you to win. Jim, you had 14.5 points. It was so close. So very close. And so Badger, close. You got the awesome score of 13 for the 13 questions of doom.
Woohoo! So, I lose
an again. Even par. An even par.
My record stands. I regret
so that. That closes it out for this week. Remember, folks, you can go ahead and play the home game at home with your friends and family. Just rewind this podcast and go and look for our other awesome 7 Roundtable of Terrors featuring the 13 Questions of Doom. Thank you again tonight for playing round number 8, The Ghosts Go to the Movies. Yay!
Thank you, Storm. And once again, we couldn't do it without our great co-host, Storm, Meat Hook Jim, the unknown scare actor, and losing again, Drew Badger. This is the 13 Questions of Doom here on The Big Scary Show.
I guess you're
who's the winner? Jerry. Who's the winner? Jerry.
Yeah, but he didn't mention you. You mentioned he mentioned Meat Hook Jim and the unknown scare actor. He didn't mention Jerry.
I know.
Aha. Damn what? It. Caught that.
Oh.
So how much grace. Turtle wax do you need anyway? Jesus Christ.
And also the Haunster Mentalist and the Haunt Rocker, Jerry Vane.
Thank you.
Jerry's got like 3 lifetimes worth of Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat now.
hey, you know what? I got rice. I got all this rice. But, you know, everybody I know is getting married lately, so there you go.
Does that mean I'm going to get hit by boxes of Rice-A-Roni?
Yeah, I'm just not going to
That'd be fantastic.
You know that's a gift. You know that's a gift.
There's a horror movie right there.
That's a gift.
I'm just not going to empty the boxes first.
That's what I thought. That's what I mean. Melted my boxes.
Oh, I love that.
Are you looking for a comprehensive ticketing solution for your haunted attraction? HauntPay has the answer. We skip the features you don't need and focus on the ones you like, such as timed ticketing and repeat time slots, variable ticket types, bundle and combo tickets, social media discounts. And now featuring all-in-one options, including managing your tickets online and at the door, as well as upselling and managing your merchandise and concessions with a comprehensive report on everything at the end of the night. Head on over to HauntPay.com and get started in 60 seconds for free.
Greetings, listeners, and welcome. Watch out, don't trip over that torso. It's time for Between the Corpses.
Greetings, haunters. Meat Hook Jim here. Wow, what a weekend. Show's a little bit late because this weekend's been crazy, so I got nothing. We'll catch you next episode, maybe. And the rest of this month is just going to be a whirlwind. See ya.
Night of the Bloody Apes. See creatures that are half man, half beast. All horror. They rip, they tear, they claw you to pieces. The Night of the Bloody Apes makes you see the hell man creates for himself. The Night of the Bloody Apes.
All right, this is Haunstrumentalist, and I am here again at the Midnight Syndicate Conspiracy in the Shadows show. I'm here with Ashley Watkins, who is the vocalist for Midnight Syndicate Conspiracy of Shadows. Ashley, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, thank you.
When you got asked to do the show, what did you know about the band at the time?
When I was first asked to do the show, I was kind of vaguely familiar with the music, but I didn't know too much about Midnight Syndicate, so my first reaction was definitely jump on YouTube and listen to some tracks. They have some really, really awesome stuff, and I was honestly just thrilled at the opportunity to join them for the Halloween weekends.
How much time did it take to get prepared for all this? I mean, as far as learning what they wanted you to sing. Now, you're singing in Latin, correct?
Yeah, I do sing Latin. I do also have some English as well. And all of the Latin does translate into things in English that make sense. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, just gibberish. I would say it took about a 2 or 3 week rehearsal process to really nail down the music, to mark all the blocking, figure out, you know, what we want to do with the space and how to create the character.
Okay. What is the character's name, actually?
It's kind of a mystery. You know, we leave it open to interpretation so everybody can sort of develop their own story in their mind. Mm-hmm. So some people might think I'm good. Some people might think I'm evil. Some people might not be sure. So there's not exactly an exact through story. It's left a little bit open to interpretation.
When my wife was listening, when we were watching the show, she's like, okay, so she sings on the albums, right? I'm like, no, they actually added that for the show. She's like, well, how am I supposed to hear her?
Yeah.
My wife fell in love with your voice.
Oh, thank you.
What has been the biggest difficulty doing this show so far?
Gosh, the biggest difficulty. Honestly, it's been pretty rewarding overall. I would say probably one of the biggest difficulties is honestly maneuvering with the dress that I wear, because it's got a pretty long train mm-hmm. and a hoop, and it's a lot of material. So being able to kind of focus on just singing and walking without tripping is probably the honest.
I have trouble just walking around in shorts, and I fall on my butt half the time.
With heels and everything, yeah. That's probably, it sounds silly, but honestly, it's like just focusing on walking and not looking dumb.
There you go. Now, do you have any projects outside of this that you do?
Yeah. I am a vocalist full-time, and I do acting as well. So I have a website, AshleyMarieWatkins.com, and I do tour and perform with other groups and do solo work and some acting work as well. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, at the time of this recording, the show is going to be coming up on October 13th. You've got 2 weeks left to come out and see Midnight Syndicate's Conspiracy of Shadows with Miss Ashley Watkins on vocals. Your vocals added a whole element to the songs, and I've been a fan of the band since 2006, actually longer than that. And to hear these songs, and like I was telling them, with different interpretations with the vocals, it just added a whole new breath and element to it. Any chance of working with them down the line? Possibly?
Yeah, gosh, I would absolutely love to work with them again. We've definitely talked and have agreed, to stay in touch about future projects, and I would be thrilled to continue collaborating with them in the future.
Cool. All right, Ashley, thank you so much for coming. I'll let you relax. This is the Haunt Instrumentalist here at Midnight Syndicate Conspiracy of Shadows at Cedar Park. It's that place up north. Anyway, I'm for the Big Scare Show, and I'm out.
Ready to dress up your show? Need to pump new life into old props? Just want to show something no one else has? Do what Alice Cooper, Distortions Unlimited, and A-list haunters all over the world do. Wear Von Karon. Durable, handcrafted, dependable year after year. Von Karon. When you scare enough to wear the very best. VonKaron.com. VonKaron.com.
Haunted Vista. Here we are, mid-haunt season. Hope yours is scarily good fun.
Oh, come on. Not again.
Yeah. The cheese factor is running rampant here once again at the Vista, but that's quite all right. Hope everyone's enjoying their season. We've been on the road quite a bit this year, investigating all kinds of haunts, and also been cheering on as Maul just basically knocks them dead left and right.
Do you know what you're full of?
At this point, I'd have to say probably a big box full of Count Chocula. In the spirit of the haunting season, I wanted to take an in-depth look at one of the classics of the horror genre, which just passed its 50th anniversary. Of course, I'm referring to none other than George A. Romero's original black-and-white 1968 classic,
Night of the Living Dead.
Now, you can turn around and say, what in the world is this guy going to talk about this flick that hasn't been said over 1,000 times before? And you'd have a valid point, but I'm going to put a more personal touch on the proceedings here.
They're coming to get you, Barbara. They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
How many times has that been mimicked, imitated, or duplicated in various remakes and who knows what other kind of horror films, huh? Actually, my personal history of this film doesn't hit till I was almost 16, I'm ashamed to admit it.
Sorry, man.
I was actually very much aware of the film and its sequel, Dawn of the Dead, but my parents, even at that age, wouldn't let me anywhere near either film. Then, one Sunday afternoon in May of 1983, Chicago station WSNS TV 44, gotta get the proper station identification in there for all you UHF fans from years gone by.
Sometimes I want to punch you in your perfect teeth.
And they ran it uncut, and I do mean uncut. Every last little bit of gut-munching and trowel-stabbing was fully intact, and you bet your bottom dollar somebody ended up in seriously deep doo-doo because that station never tried that ever again. I mean, seriously, they ran this thing on 12 noon on a Sunday afternoon on a beautiful spring day. Yeah, that wasn't too bright. Well, in spite of all this, this small little film that director George A. Romero produced with a bunch of his buddies outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, during the course of 1967, essentially was a college project, basically turned the horror genre, not to mention the film industry, all on its ear, although not all at once. Now, as I mentioned at the top of this film, there have been tons of books, essays, and documentaries put together on the history, impact, and significance of this film, and there is no way I could even try to compete with any of them because they've done a far better job than I would even dream of trying. But I will add a few viewpoints of my own to the big literary cauldron that this film resides upon. One of the things that makes a film survive generation after generation is the intensity. It's black and white, and it's filmed in a semi-documentary style, which gives it a certain edge that, years later, films like The Blair Witch Project and Cloverfield picked up upon, and it still works today. Romero was ingenious with his handheld cameras, even though he says they were just basically making do with what they had, but that flash-in-the-pan sort of style that he was using really, really adds to the gravity and intensity of this film. Another point worth mentioning is obviously the breaking down of all kinds of social taboos here. First of all, this film came out in 1968, even though most of it was filmed during the course of 1967, and at the time, the civil rights movement was in an uproar, and this film had an African-American as its lead, and that had nothing to do with any of that, as basically Romero has stated more than a few times during the course of his life that, plain and simple, Dwayne Jones got the lead as Ben because he was the best actor amongst the group of friends, and that was that. This had nothing to do with the assassination of Martin Luther King, which apparently happened around the same time as this film started to hit theaters. But let's face it, both society at the time and history itself have not lost the significance of those events crossing one another. And again, as cliched it may sound by today's standards, another big aspect of this film is the level of violence and the use of gore that basically broke down everything that was going on at the time in terms of horror cinema. The bloodiest thing around about that time were films like Psycho or Dementia 13, and they paled in comparison to this full-on assault upon your senses. Society as a whole, not to mention horror film geeks, may well be desensitized towards this sort of thing, but in 1968, this was all a little much to take. Famed Chicago film critic, the late, great Roger Ebert, mentioned how kids just absolutely were stunned into silence, not to mention several into tears, by the sheer weight of what was happening upon the screen. As he mentioned, what were the parents thinking dropping their kids off at a theater with a film titled Night of the Living Dead? He called it in much very poor taste at the time, though he did rescind his review many, many years later, calling it a masterpiece of suspense and social commentary. I think the other aspect of that, what keeps it going, is these sort of things that are going on at the time of the film's original release just keep happening, and they just keep getting worse. And as we continue to become desensitized towards these sort of things, these films do remind us of what really is going on out there, but in a very left-handed sort of way, which in a certain sense, I think, is what Romero intended in a sort of left-handed way to begin with. He was very idealistic, and they had mentioned more than once that when he filmed Night of the Living Dead, not to mention Dawn of the Dead, that a decade later, they were all kind of bemoaning the loss of the dream of the 60s, that it didn't quite turn out the way they had hoped, which is one of the reasons he also had Dennis Hopper in Land of the Dead in 2005, but I'm getting way ahead of the story. But both of those late great gentlemen had similar ideas on what was going on at that time in the world. Speaking of Romero himself, Night of the Living Dead's original concept was based on Richard Matheson's 1954 vampire apocalypse novel, I Am Legend. Romero has mentioned more than once in his lifetime that Matheson's novel was the direct inspiration for Night of the Living Dead. The original working title of the script was Night of Anubis, Anubis being the Egyptian god of death for those who collect such information, and once the film was completed, the original title was Night of the Flesh Eaters, but unfortunately distributors were not about to put a film out with that title, as Romero remarked more than once. With deadlines looming, the film title was quickly changed to Night of the Living Dead, and while history was made, unfortunately, the small group that produced the film forgot to copyright the title, and it became forever entrenched upon public domain, which means anybody could sell it and distribute it, and Romero and his little party didn't get a dime for all of their efforts, which is a true shame, as this film broke down so many social and cultural mores of the time, or at the very least highlighted them for everybody to see in graphic detail. Now, speaking of redistributions and remakes, the most important I would have to say would be Tom Savini's 1990 reimaging of the film. It was in full color, featured Tony Todd and a number of other horror luminaries, and unfortunately it barely got noticed upon its release in that year, and it also caused a major rift between Savini and Romero over distribution rights. As a film, it's not bad, but obviously it's nowhere near to the level of the original. Now, this film has been reimagined and redone countless times, and all of them stink. I'm not even going to try to list them all here, but I find all of them cheap, tacky, tasteless, and poorly imaged, not to mention poorly advised films that just aren't worth their celluloid, or, for that matter, your bandwidth. In terms of the original film, there's some really, really nice editions of it, though I would strongly recommend against the 30th anniversary edition, which was padded out with some extra scenes and extra footage, which offended the aficionados to no end. I won't go into it, but this thing really, really ticked a lot of people off. There's a nice 40th anniversary edition of Night of the Living Dead floating around there, complete with commentaries, behind the scenes, and documentaries. I highly recommend it if you can find it, but it's pretty sparse in terms of its availability. One of the best books on the film, both in front and behind the camera, is simply titled Night of the Living Dead by Joe Kane. This details all the little nooks and crannies in terms of the politics of what went on during and after the filming, and it's a fascinating read. Highly recommended. 50 years is a long time for a film to survive and have the ongoing staying power that Night of the Living Dead does, especially in the horror genre. It holds a special place alongside films like Dracula, Frankenstein, Psycho, Them, and all the greats of the science fiction horror genre. It also asks some very pointed questions about what was going on socially and politically at the time, and maybe, just maybe, if we take a closer look at what the film said then, just possibly we could apply it to what's going on today in our world. The late George Romero was a very sharp man who had a keen eye on the social pulse of our country. Maybe if we take a quick look back, we just may make a few less mistakes going forward. I realize I did a piece on the films of George Romero in the not-too-distant past, but I really felt with the film's 50th anniversary that another look was well justified. In the near future, I'm going to touch upon the sequel, Dawn of the Dead, but that is about as far as I'm going to go. Those are George's most influential and, for my money, best works. Beyond that, while I do enjoy some of his other films, none really have the impact as the first two. And with it being haunting season, I have to give out my recommendation for this episode, and as it has been for so many years running, it still has to go to The Devil's Attic, run by Jason Baseman over in Louisville, Kentucky. One of the best, most passionate haunted houses you're ever going to see, and has the best bang for your buck you're ever going to get. Jason runs one of the most passionate, well done, and with quite a splash of humor, haunts you will ever run across in the Louisville area. There can consistently ranked in the top three haunts to visit by thescarefactor.com, and this year, for 2018, they have new additions including a swamp room, an outdoor forest room, and an 8-foot spider hallway to trap the unwary. Truly one of the best in the country, and well worth your time and travel investment. I would also like to make mention that my wife and I, not to mention our godkids, will be guest acting the queue line on the evening of Saturday, October 27th. So, for those of you who are listening and wish to make the journey, please feel free to stop by for a bite. Comments, critiques, or suggestions, drop me a line at erweister@wooh.rr.com. Or look me up on Facebook. I respond to both, but you stand much better chance of catching me on the
Evil Book of Faces.
Yeah, I know. I got a new effect. Leave me alone. Take a wander over to the Weister's Halloween Haunt Journal Blogspot page, full of news and reviews that you can always use and abuse. Next time on the Vista, I'm going to go a bit off the beaten path for the Halloween edition. Having grown up a monster kid, I got turned onto it at a very young age, 3 or 4 or 5, somewhere in that vicinity. I thought it would be a nice little switch for those of you who have young kids who may be interested in this sort of thing, where to start, what films and television programs can break it to them gently, inspiring and nourishing their interest rather than traumatizing them and forcing them into therapy for the next 10 to 20 years. In other words, don't freak the kid out. You'll freak the wife out, and that might put the kibosh in any haunting plans you got for a while, wouldn't it?
Oh, wow. Good landing, man.
So until next time, continued happy landings, and of course, continued happy hauntings, and make the most of haunting season 2018. And always remember Svengoolie's cradle and brush your fangs, comb your face, drink your milk before it clots, bite mama good night, and always remember that I hid the body because I just can't think of any more one-liners for this sort of thing.
Oh, why don't you just give up?
Continued happy hauntings, friends, and see you next time.
Hello, everyone. Drew Badger here. We're live on the road in Hickory, North Carolina at Lake Hickory Haunts. They've got a lake, they've got a haunt, and it's in Hickory, so perfectly named. Been going here for several years here. My friend Deb and I are out here checking out the stuff, but man, I have heard a lot of new stuff going on here, so I had to go to the source, the owner, Ryan Settlemyer. How you doing, man?
I'm great. How are you, Drew?
Oh, man, the season has started. It's still a little warm down here in the south. It's probably about 75, 80 degrees now. The leaves haven't quite started changing yet, but man, we're hearing some screams out here. The fog is thick. The lighting is great. The music at the Midway is awesome. And yes, there's still chainsaws here, but you've got a lot of different stuff from between 2017, 2018. You've really gone all out this year.
That is right. This year is our biggest year of changes yet. You know, every year I say we're going to go take it a little easy next year, and every year we just do more.
That never
happens. So this year we have tons of brand new attractions, and we also have changed attractions. So brand new attractions, we have Descent and Aftermath, as well as our 4D Asylum experience, which actually, unfortunately, Drew, is not here tonight. So it's actually at the Cleveland County Fair, so it's a mobile attraction.
So we'll just have to come back later on in the season and check that out.
That's right.
There you go.
it'll be back in October. So, Descent is our craziest attraction, so I'll go ahead and give that away for you guys. Descent is an all-underground attraction, literally underground.
Are we going to have to crawl on our hands and knees?
No.
Oh, good.
No, it is a man-made cave, but it features a cavern, darkness, other types of cave systems, which you'll find, as well as sewers, all kinds of things. But you'll see when you go through, this thing is literally completely underground. It is nuts. I can't explain it. You have to see it for yourself. It's 10 feet underground. The air is different in there. It's cooler because it's underground. It's a really cool thing. So Descent is our biggest, craziest attraction we've ever done. So if you've ever been to Lake Hickory Haunts before, you got to come now and see Descent.
Definitely. I have no doubt that this is going to be a fantastic thing. And looking forward to go through it here in just a few minutes. I know that you know, you change things up every year, but why was this year so important that you just had to go all out? I mean, did you go to Transworld and just say, yes, I'll have that, or was it just, you know, what was the reason for saying we're gonna add not one but two, even two and a half if you count the portable one, new attractions here?
Yeah, well, the reason is just competition. You know, the haunt industry is improving. There's more haunts out there. And, you know, as a business, we have to find a way to set ourselves apart. And, you know, if we want to say we are the best, then we've got to work like the best. So, you know, last year finished up Blackout Night on November 4th, and I was back to work on November 20th, and I haven't stopped since.
So. Blackout was a lot of fun last year. Despite it raining that night, I came through here with a group of people, and we had a blast. I assume there'll be a Blackout Night again this year?
Oh, yeah. We'll have a Blackout Night at the end of season. And I got a little off track, but we also have Aftermath as a brand-new attraction.
Yes.
So Aftermath is the second brand-new attraction. It's like Mad Max and... Mad Max and The Walking Dead had a baby.
Oh,
so it's kind of like Negan mixed with Mad Max, and you know, it's a post-apocalyptic city, crazy madmen, no zombies, just the survivors of the apocalypse right after extinction. So extinction transitions into Aftermath, right?
Oh, that sounds fun. Now, you know, the first couple of years I was here, you had a lake, and you still have the lake, and that was part of it this year. Or those couple of years. You haven't had it for a couple of years. Is this year, is the lake being utilized as part of the haunt?
So you walk over the water twice. It's not for a very long time, but you do. So at one point you walk over the water on a bridge, and at another point you walk over the water on docks.
Oh,
so
okay.
Actually floating docks on the water. And then, of course, you got the backdrop with the sea creature, the pirate ship, and the phenomenal fog rolling across the water. So it's always utilized for looks.
It's a sight to behold, folks. And, you know, there are some places that use water in their attractions. This place has an actual real lake here that you know, years ago we used to take a boat across and stuff, and now we're walking across. So, you know, you never know what you're going to find out here at Lake Hickory Haunts.
That's right. And third new attraction is we've revamped our entire Nightmare Factory. So the entire bottom half of the Nightmare Factory is more industrial, you know, just literally factory, if you think brick, pipe. Mm. So there's a doll factory, a forgery and boiler, and a workshop room with an elevator floor, all types of new things in there. And then, like I said, we also have the 4D Asylum. So all in all, four brand new, but you'll find that there's new additions and changes all the way through the whole haunt.
How is Boss the Clown like in these changes?
Boss the Clown loves them. He's ecstatic. He won't show it. You know, he's always mad and everything.
Of course.
But he really likes it.
And hopefully less clowns?
No.
Yeah.
Never. Sorry.
Nah, fine. Whatever. So anyway, for people maybe traveling along I-40, Highway 321, you're coming out to the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains or the foothills of North Carolina to do some leaf watching in October. Yeah. Just traveling around and you want to see a really, really cool haunt, half indoors, half outdoors, with a lake, and just, frankly, it's in the middle of nowhere, too, so they can get real loud and real screamy, and it's really cool. How can people get more information, buy some tickets, find out when the events are, like Blackout and all that cool stuff, and learn everything there is, media, social medias, and websites for Lake Hickory Haunts?
So the first and best thing, of course, is lakehickoryhaunts.com. LakeHickoryHaunts.com. Social media, we got Facebook, Lake Hickory Haunts, Instagram, Lake Hickory Haunts, Snapchat, Lake Hickory HNTS. If you're here on site, we have a geo filter for Snapchat, so you can take that Snapchat and use that geo filter. Also, we have Twitter, Lake Hickory HNTS, and we have YouTube, Lake Hickory Haunts.
So basically, if you Google Lake Hickory Haunts, you're going to find all the information you need.
Yeah, I think you told me that last year or two, and that is exactly
and
right.
That's what's happening. There you go. Ryan, again, wishing nothing but success here for year number 9, I believe, for Lake
Hickory.
Year 7? Oh, gosh, man, has it been that few? I've been coming here for like 4 years now, and I've just seen it just grow from, you know, from humble beginnings to this, and this is fantastic. So, but anyway, check out LakeHickoryHaunts.com. Check out all the cool stuff. If you find yourself in the area, come out here. You will get scared. And my name is Drew Badger. This is the Big Scary Show, hanging out on the road, and we are out. And ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the October edition of the Gruesome Giveaway, sponsored by our very good friends at ScreamlineStudios.com. Be sure to go over there and check out all their really cool stuff. Now, we've had an awful lot of listeners over the past few weeks, and we did not have a winner in September, so you know that the prize we're giving away in October is going to be extra special. So I'm going to ask you a question here in just a second. The answer is in the show. Be sure to listen carefully, and we need your name and your number and the answer sent to us in an email to contest@bigscaryshow.com before midnight on October 22nd. Without further ado, the question for the October Gruesome Giveaway is... what novel did George Romero base his script of Night of the Living Dead off of? If you think you know the answer, send us your name, your number, and of course the answer to contest@bigscaryshow.com before midnight on October 22nd, and you could be randomly selected to be the winner of the Gruesome Giveaway here on the Big Scary Show. Thank you, Screamline Studios, for providing us some really great prizes. Good luck, everyone.
Passion is what drives us. The passion to be the best. For over 10 years, that passion has taken us from eBay to becoming the driving force in the haunted house industry, and we are just getting started. From flex props to 9-foot giants, great details, great looks, and great pricing is the foundation we are built on. Our heart beats Halloween and haunts. We are a creepy collection. Let us deliver our passion to your haunted attraction this season. CreepyCollection.com. Now that's creepy.
More zombie than zombie on the Big Scary Show.
Here is a peculiar case in contrast to that of the zombies, which your servant claims to have seen, where supposedly they are dead, yet retain a certain amount of animation. She lives, yet walks in the land of those beyond.
Zombies.
Zombies? What's them?
Dead folks. What walks around?
Have you seen any zombies here?
living dead.
That's it. That's what it is. Dead folks was too lazy to lay down.
As we slide back into the swamp where we hid the body, we would like to thank the following sponsors. Screamline Studios, Dark Imaginings, Von Caron Productions, Haunt Pay, Ticket Leap, and Creepy Collection. We would also like to thank Virgil Franklin, Master of the Ether Muse, as well as the Fordga hosts, including Storm, Rants and More, HauntMinute.com, The Unknown Scare Actor, Actor Trainer and Traveling Actor Troupe. For more information, check out MaulMonsters.com. That's MaulMonsters.com. Drew Badger, Actor Trainer and Consultant. Find out more at RabbitBadger.org. And Jerry Vane, the Hauntstrumentalist, for all your heavy metal and haunt needs. JerryVane.com. And finally, you, the listener. Without you, we are nothing.
The Big Scary Show is copyright Big Scary Show LLC, and no rebroadcast of this show may be made without express permission of the owners. All music used on The Big Scary Show is used with expressed permission of the artists themselves.